You want it. You need it. It's what everyone's talking about. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Now, here's Kevin.
JP Finley will be a guest today on the program. We'll talk a lot with JP about a lot of different things, including a lot of Redskins-related conversations. So JP coming up in just a few minutes. I want to tell you real quickly about Hawthorne.co. That's Hawthorne with an E, .co. Hawthorne is a cologne company, but they do a lot more and they offer a lot more. But right now, if you think smelling good is important, well, Hawthorne smells really good. Getting Hawthorne cologne is really easy. And the first step to finding out what kind of cologne works for you is taking a quick 2-minute quiz where Hawthorne will tell you the two colognes that are best for you. It's an easy quiz. It's actually a very interesting quiz where they find out a little bit about you and your personal hygiene and your personal interests. It's non-identifying, but ultimately it will give you a suggestion on colognes that work for you. And then if you want, you can make some purchases as well. Hawthorne.co, Hawthorne with an E.co. Would be the perfect gift, by the way, for your father. It's Father's Day this weekend. You can take the online quiz for your father if you know all the answers, and that would identify the right cologne for him. Most of you have been using the same cologne for a long period of time. You were given it as a gift from a girlfriend or your wife, and you don't even know if it works for you. If your girlfriend or wife like it, that's one thing, but maybe there's a better fit for you, and that's why I would advocate going to Hawthorne.co. That's Hawthorne with an E.co, not .com. Hawthorne.co, use my promo code KevinDC, and you'll get 10% off your first purchase. That's Hawthorne.co, use my promo code KevinDC to get 10% off your first purchase, Hawthorne.co. All right, JP Finley coming up here shortly. I wanted to start with this story because it came out after my radio show this morning. Serena Williams announced that she is going to play in the U.S. Open when it starts end of August and goes through the second weekend in September. The USTA got the thumbs up from Mayor Cuomo yesterday in New York that they could go ahead and schedule and play the U.S. Open. Now, the reason I'm doing this story is I think there's a bit of a contrast between Serena Williams and, say, some of the players in the NBA that don't want to play, Kyrie Irving led. First of all, I've always loved Serena Williams. I know that she has been one of those controversial figures in the sport for a while. I've loved Serena. I think she's a badass competitor. She's one of the great champions of all time. Even though tennis has become a bit of a niche sport in the U.S., much more so than it used to be, it's still wildly popular around the rest of the world, especially in Europe, South America, Australia. It isn't so much here anymore. It's a shame because this has been a golden era for the sport. Three of the greatest five players, you could argue, in men's tennis history, Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, and Novak Djokovic have played and, you know, compiled a ridiculous number of major titles. And you could argue that Serena is the greatest female player of all time. I've just always been a Serena fan. She's 38 years old, which blows me away. I love her as a competitor. I think she's a charismatic figure. I love her overpowering game. I think she's just a champion in so many ways. This statement from her, you know, read as follows: I really can't wait to return in New York and play the U.S. Open in 2020. I feel like the USTA is going to do a really good job of ensuring everything is amazing and everything is perfect and everyone is safe. It's going to be exciting. It's been over 6 months since a lot of us played professional tennis. I'll certainly miss the fans, don't get me wrong, just being out there in New York and being a part of that crowd and hearing the crowd and hearing everybody cheer. I'll miss that. They got me through some really tough matches. This is crazy. I'm excited. Closed quote. She went on to say how important it was, she felt, for the sport to return for not just the players, but a lot of people associated with the sport that, you know, rely on this for their livelihoods. Anyway, good for Serena Williams. I'm a fan. I'm also a fan of the U.S. Open. It's a part of the rhythm of Labor Day and beyond. That includes, obviously, primarily the football season. And if we get the U.S. Open with college football and pro football, it'll seem at that point that things are back to normal. Quick mention that on the radio show this morning, I had Joe Theismann on the show for 45 minutes. He was great. And I also had David Aldridge on the show as well. You can listen to both of those interviews at theteam980.com or by downloading the Team 980 app. All right, let's bring in J.P. Finley, of course, of NBC Sports Washington, the Redskins Talk podcast. You know, I was just thinking about when I called you yesterday or texted you to come on. It's actually been a while since you've been on. I kind of feel like when I launched this podcast, the person that I had on more than anybody else was you, because you came on, you know, on Mondays after games every week. And so, you know, that's a 16 to 20 week run. I forget what it was. But anyway, how are you? What have you been up to? And is everybody well?
Yeah, you know, I am good. Everybody's well. We're just kind of grinding this out. You and I definitely talked during quarantine, because I was looking at our texts, and the last couple of texts we had sent was when I was talking to you for the podcast, but in the basement with my daughters doing arts and crafts, and I sent you a picture just of the complete chaos.
Yeah, right.
Things are better now that we can be outside, but Kev, I am desperate. I will absolutely call into the podcast every Monday after a Redskins. I hope that happens.
I hope so, too. No, I really do. I mean, this would be the biggest disaster for both of us and anybody in sports, especially in NFL first towns. It would be pretty bad. So before, you know, I've got some Redskin stuff that we can get to here in a moment. But what have you been doing? We did talk. I just looked at my notes. We did something in early May. So over a month ago, I think it was.
That's crazy.
JP and I live pretty close to one another in a suburb of Washington, D.C., for those of you that are listening from outside the market, but most of you know the market anyway. We both live in Bethesda, probably less than a mile from one another. What's been your go-to restaurant for carryout or curbside pickup during the pandemic?
You know what's interesting is there's a restaurant down MacArthur after the Cabin John Bridge that had been my go-to, but we just had a very poor experience earlier this week, so I'm not going to name them because I'm not going to put them in a bad spot. Fish Taco has been a go-to for us. Fish Taco is really good. I have done Vache for pizza a number of times.
Which pizza?
Vache.
Oh, Vache. We've done the Vache, bringing home the components and making the pizzas at home.
Ooh, that's good. So Vache will also do a half-baked for you. So you can go and get it, and then, like, you know, a lot of times I'll pick it up while my daughters are napping, and then we'll cook it that night for dinner. We have one of the pizza doughs in the freezer, but I haven't made it myself.
We've made a night out of it three different times of, you know, getting the dough, the sauce, the, you know, the mozzarella, and, you know, and doing it. Basically, we got one of those stone platforms to put it on, and, you know, you get the grill to like 500 degrees somewhere around there. It's actually great. But yeah, we've done that as well. The Fish Taco is really good. Let me just say that there is my favorite restaurant is on MacArthur Boulevard, 5 minutes from my house. And you're not referring to my favorite Belgian restaurant, are you?
No, I am not.
Okay, good.
You talking about the one right in the little shopping center where your studio is?
No. The Et Voila is the Belgian restaurant on MacArthur Boulevard, which is
in D.C.
Yeah, in D.C.
I am talking the other way.
Oh, you're talking about the other way, MacArthur. Oh, now I know what you're talking about now.
You know what's interesting? This is a restaurant that Gary Williams loves.
Of course he does. I know exactly which restaurant you're talking about.
Then I had a tough experience.
Well, we won't name it.
I took my daughters to the canal, and then we went over there to pick up dinner, and it just wasn't as good as it normally is. And I'm going to give them a break on this one.
Yeah. So, God,
you know, was hyper local.
That's all right. Most people are familiar with our discussion. Favorite pandemic alcoholic beverage?
So I kind of switched from bourbon to vodka as the weather warms up.
Yeah.
So of late, I've been drinking a lot of transfusions, which are usually a golf course drink, but I've been making them at home.
Really? You got the grape juice at home?
Yes, I do. But here's a new wrinkle. The ginger ale just has so much sugar.
And caffeine, that, too, I think.
Well, I found at Whole Foods, you know how the flavored seltzer waters are the big thing now, and everybody usually does lime.
LaCroix or whatever.
Or grapefruit.
Yeah.
Whole Foods has a ginger-flavored seltzer water that has no sugar. I mean, it's just a little bit of that flavor and then way, way less of everything else. So if you're interested, I can drop you off a couple cans.
Ginger ale, grape juice, vodka, soda, ice, transfusion. I don't think I missed a component. I'm certainly familiar with drinking them. The vodka of choice, I'm going to guess that you're a Tito's guy because it seems like everybody is these days.
I'm a Tito's guy.
Yeah.
It's what they have done so well, and they've cornered
marketing.
I think, but they also have kept the price point low.
Yeah, they have.
Like,
you're right about that.
Kettle One and Grey Goose and all that stuff is a significant step up. Like, you can get the big jug of Tito's for what a small bottle of Kettle is, and I'm out on it. So I'm a Tito's guy. You know what's a really good beer in the summer? Have you tried Slightly Mighty?
I've heard of it. I've not tried it.
It's great. It's imagine a Michelob Ultra IPA.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really good, a lot of flavor, and just kind of light. You can, if you're so interested, you can drink a number of them on a good summer afternoon.
Well, you can drink a number of them. One to two transfusions and you're in a bit of trouble. That's on a hot day. It can be a bit more problematic, as I found out the other day, because my back nine, usually it works the correct way. Like a couple of drinks and my game improves. It did not happen that way yesterday, as we talked to J.P. Finley about nothing having to do with what either one of us usually talks about. Let's talk about
that. I haven't figured out my golf game. My sweet spot is holes like 3 through 8. So I work the kinks out, then I'm in good shape. Even if I'm not drinking, dude, I tend to just kind of fall apart after that. But who knows?
Yeah, my golf game's been diminishing returns here. What is your best round of golf here so far?
I had an 88 at Raspberry Falls maybe last month.
That's a good round.
Yeah.
That's a good round. It sounds like you're doing a good job keeping that handicap up for big money matches.
I don't mind getting strokes, Kev. Never have.
You and me both. Top Redskins off-season question that you've gotten so far is what?
Everything's about Haskins. Everything.
100% right.
And that is... So, interestingly, to me, there's zero QB battle. Like, this is Haskins' job, and if he stumbles mightily or some super fluky scheduling thing happens, maybe Kyle Allen gets a start early on because he'll know the offense. But this is Haskins' job. And the whole year, right or wrong, will kind of boil down to how he performs. Because if he is good, then this team could be – I don't think they'll ever contend for a playoff spot, but they could kind of keep it around 500 and be in that in-the-hunt graphic – around Thanksgiving, maybe, especially now that there's a 7th wild card spot, and this team could really build momentum towards 2021, and they'll have a ton of salary cap room. They'll have an extra third round pick in addition to all their other picks, and all of a sudden you feel real momentum building for the burgundy and gold. The flip side is if Dwayne doesn't play well, then they're going to be quarterback shopping because they're going to have a bad record. They'll be picking in the top five. And the new regime can say, hey, you know, Dwayne wasn't our guy. We need to find our guy.
You know, it's really true. And I wouldn't – there's a certain type of fan or listener or viewer for you or reader of you that we both deal with all the time. And it's the guy that wants to spend, you know, 15 minutes talking about, you know, whether or not, you know, Cole Holcomb's the weak side linebacker and who's going to be the strong side backer and getting into some real minutia. Almost every other person that follows the team wants to talk about Haskins. That's all I hear, you know, from typically. I mean, that's 80%, 90% of the questions. And it's because, in my view, the fan base is totally split on this one. You know, half of the fan base is convinced that they didn't see anything of promise last year. And even the things they did see that were promising will only lead to a limited upside. And they think that they should have addressed quarterback here in the offseason with number two overall. And then half of us, and I would put myself into this category, are optimistic, you know, that we saw something that, well, in my case, I didn't know that I would see going into last year and actually didn't think that I would. But he is, for a guy that has started seven games, but he was a first-round pick, I think he's got the fan base split. Do you agree with me that it's 50-50, or do you have the percentage breakdown differently than I do?
I'm going to go with thirds, because I think maybe you don't hear from or maybe lumping two groups together. There is absolutely a third of the people just think he stinks. They don't care what he did last year. They want to move on. I think those people are wrong. Then I think there's a third that I would put you and I into that saw some real signs of encouragement during, especially late in the year. And I would combine this and how he's handled the first 6 months of 2020. I think he's been really impressive. He's built his body into different shape. And what mattered most to me is what Scott Turner said about him really working hard to learn the offense, that anytime Scott Turner throws something at him, he knows what he's saying.
Right.
But there's another third of people that have already determined that this guy's a future MVP and maybe going to Canton. And I think those people are I think they're like anything in life, the fringes are kind of crazy. If you're ready to dismiss him or you're ready to anoint him, I think you're wrong. But I think there should be a very optimistic, glass half full middle, and that's where I reside. I think he's going to be good this year. I don't think the offense is the disaster so many think it could be. Now, they got real questions on the line, and everything will come or go depending how the line plays. But I think they got – I think Haskins – we had Chris Sims on my podcast, and one of the things I really like about Dwayne is that he looks to go deep. He looks to make chunk plays. He plays to win, and I think Scott Turner's offense was North Turner's offense. If you look at what Cam Newton did really well, they were going deep. They were looking to make big plays, and I think that hasn't really been happening here since Kirk was going deep to Deshaun a while ago. So I think that could really help open up the offense.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's the one the one characteristic about his game that I – liked from the beginning is that he's fearless and he plays aggressively. Like, he errs on the side of being aggressive, and that really it was hard to do playing for Bill Callahan in particular, because they approached it very conservatively overall. But when he had those opportunities to either, you know, err on the side of being completely cautious or going for it, more times than not he went for it. And I think you saw, you know, a competitive urgency that you want to see. I mean, there's a lot more to playing the position, but that's the stuff that's innate that is hard to coach up. And I think he has that.
Totally agree.
So, you know, they didn't put a lot around him, and they didn't really have the ability to put a lot around him. But the talent that is around him, we don't know that it won't flourish, because it's so young. I mean, you start with 3 second-year wide receivers, one of which we have a really good feeling about, and then you've got two other additions to the offense in Antonio Gandy-Golden and Antonio Gibson that people have high expectations of, and then even an offensive lineman that has ridiculous talent in Sadiq Charles. It's one of those things, you know, you said you expect him to have a good year. I think it will be helpful that he'll have an improved defense. I mean, last year when he played well in the final game and a half, really well, you know, he didn't have a good defense. I mean, the defense wasn't turning people over, wasn't giving him short fields, wasn't getting stops and more possessions, etc. So that should be a help. I think the offense, though, to me, is a complete mystery in terms of what we're going to get in support of what we were just talking about, the things that we like about Dwayne, because he's going to need some help.
Definitely. And I think, I mean, it's potential versus production. The only guy you can really count on is McLaurin. I think McLaurin can make a big jump. I think having a true number one could make this offense way better. I don't see much production at all from the tight end spot. And I think that's just something we're going to have to live with for 2020. If Darius Geis could stay healthy, it could be huge for this team. I'm not sure I would bet on that based on what we've seen. But I think Kelvin Harmon and Steven Sims can be better. I think it'll take half a year. I don't expect much success from Antonio Gibson or Antonio Gandy-Golden right away. I think they kind of have separate hurdles. I think with Gibson, you got to figure out how to incorporate him in the offense. Is it running routes out of the slot? Is it in the backfield? I think Gandy-Golden, it's a significant jump in competition from Liberty to the NFL. But I think once those guys, I think not having an offseason for those guys particularly is really going to hurt them. And then, but once everybody kind of gets the flow and gets to understand some things, I think coming out of the bye, this team could finish on an upswing. And when I say Dwayne has a good year, I don't know that statistically it's going to be that great, but what I'm watching in particular, completion percentage and chunk plays. This team has not had big plays, and if he can generate those and still be accurate, then you've got a guy you can build with.
Is the starting left tackle on the roster right now, yes or no?
So it's interesting. We've been doing a series all week on our website on NBCSportsWashington.com about position battles and real position battles. You should. I might text it to you. The powers that be made us do a position battle about quarterback, and I wrote six words. I wrote Dwayne Haskins is the starter, Kyle Allen is the backup, and that was the whole story. But at left tackle, it's a much more legitimate battle. I think the job is Sadiq Charles's to win, not to lose. But if he shows up and he's in shape and he's ready to go, I think Ron's going to play him. And Ron has said repeatedly, I'm not scared to play rookies. Look at my track record. They want to develop this guy. The whole 2020 is all about the future. So I think it's Charles's job if he shows up ready to go. If he's not ready to go, I think it could be Cornelius Lucas, at least early on. He started 8 games for the Bears last year. And then you still got Jerem Christian floating around. I've heard he's had a really productive summer and has added strength to his upper body that he's needed. So maybe he'll show up in shape and ready to compete. But I know there are lots of folks that are wondering about Jason Peters or another veteran left tackle getting signed. I don't see it. I could be wrong, but I just don't see that happening. With Jason Peters particularly, he's repped by the same agent, Vincent Taylor, that repped Trent Williams. I know that agents can have tough negotiations and then come back with another client, and it's like nothing happened. I'm not sure that's going to happen this season with the Redskins and Vincent Taylor. That might take an off season. We'll see. If I had to wager on do they sign a veteran left tackle, barring an injury or something to these other dudes, I don't think it happens.
I don't know if I have an answer to that. You know, something that Ron Rivera said the other day really rung true, and it also means there's a consequence to all of this, which is the amount of time that they're actually going to get to be with these guys. Like he essentially said, we'd already know at this point, because in mini camps and OTA days and spending days with these people, whether or not we needed to go out and sign a veteran. You know, that's where that whole Antonio Brown thing came up
right
a week or so ago. I was leaning in the direction of more likely than not, by the time we get to August, there's going to be another veteran left tackle on the roster, especially with how much money they have, in terms of cap space. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if he goes young, and it would actually be encouraging. I would advocate that they, you know, go as young as they can and try to develop some of these players, as long as it gives Dwayne a chance to succeed, which I'm going to go back to your statement before you answered that question, because I've been asked about this many times too. I think we did a call segment on the radio show last week or maybe the week before. I don't think there's any way in hell that Dwayne Haskins isn't the starter to begin the season and for 16 games as long as he's healthy. This notion that I actually subscribed to months ago about the pandemic, it's going to, they're going to need somebody in here that has familiarity with the system, and then they went and traded for Kyle Allen, and now, you know, the thought, Kyle Allen, who knows, maybe he'll be the one capable and the only one capable of running the offense when we get to September 13th against Philadelphia, and he may start that opener. That is a can of worms that will never be opened, in my view. Dwayne Haskins, whatever they need to do to get him ready and up to speed on that offense to start that opener, they will do.
I think it's Dwayne. I think an injury obviously changes everything, but I'm with you, Kev. I really am. I think when Ron said his comments about, you know, if we get into some weird situation, we might have to go with Kyle, that was before the NFL kind of laid out what the actual plan is. Now, is there a wild card? I mean, if somebody got COVID or something, sure. Well, there are extreme extenuating circumstances, but week one, FedEx Field with the Eagles on the field, Dwayne Haskins starts at quarterback, no doubt in my mind.
Which tight end on the roster will lead the team in tight end receptions in 2020?
I got no idea, dude. I Logan Thomas will get the biggest opportunity. He got paid. He got real money. You can look up the contract numbers. He's got guaranteed money in there. They like him. He was durable last year. There's real kind of under-the-radar excitement about what he could be. That might just be as a physical blocking back, that's blocking tight end that's durable. I think Thaddeus Moss, they're excited about, but that foot injury's got to get right. There's a reason he, you know, wasn't drafted, and everybody, he's got a cool last name and made two touchdown catches in the national title game. I get all that, but he also wasn't drafted. So I think people need to temper their excitement. I think I heard you on the radio saying that you think people are sleeping on sprinkles, something to that effect.
I don't know. I've said that I like sprinkle. I don't know what they think of sprinkle. I like sprinkle, and I think that sprinkle is more versatile and has more upside than most people think. I also believe that Caleb Wilson, who they signed off the scrap heap last year, is going to play for somebody in the league at some point, because I think he's got real talent.
Caleb Wilson and Hale Henches are hurt by no offseason. It's just, they get less opportunity to show off for coaches, right, you know, and to make an impression. But
what was your reaction to Sprinkle? What were you going to say about Sprinkle?
I don't know that people are sleeping on him or that he's underrated, but at some point you've got to recognize that he's been in the NFL for 3 years and contributing as a rookie. So for 3 years he's been playing. A lot of these other guys haven't, and haven't been able to make rosters and all sorts of things. So I think there is a bit of a rush to dump Sprinkle or ignore him, and that might be premature, but he's got to work on his hands. You can't have – I mean, there are two big drops I can think of off the top of my head that you wonder what they did, what they could have done for Haskins in important drives. So, and then, you know, look at Rodgers' fathers on the coaching staff.
Say that again.
So Richard Rodgers, that has played, I think he has more IR stints than catches in the last 2 years.
Oh, yeah, right. I, for whatever reason, I thought you said, did you know that Richard Rodgers' father is on the coaching staff? I'm like, what?
I did. That's what I'm saying.
You said his father is on the coaching staff?
He is.
I didn't know that.
I'll pull it up real quick. I think he's assistant. Hold on. I'm pulling it up right now.
Was he with Rivera?
Yeah, he's somewhere assistant else? D-backs coach.
Really? Was he with Rivera in Carolina?
I don't know this, and you'd have to run the math, but Richard Rodgers Sr. played at Cal also, where Ron played college football. Yeah, and he was assistant D-backs coach in Carolina in 2015. Now, listen, this isn't high school. Like, just because your dad is going to be on the staff, you don't get to make varsity instead of JV or something. Like, who knows? Yeah, so Rodgers was teammates with Rivera at Cal in college, and I think they were both all Pac-10.
It's really interesting. He's not on he's not on
Richard
the website.
Rodgers.
He's not on the website.
Yeah, he is. I'll send it to you.
I'm looking at it right now, the coaching staff. Richard Rodgers Sr.? Oh, here he is. My fault.
Yeah.
My fault.
He was the special teams captain that called the play in the huddle for Cal to defeat Stanford.
Really?
He touched the ball twice on that play.
You just gave me a guest idea. That's just that story alone. I've been looking for, of course they won't give them to me, but I need, that would be a good get. Richard Rodgers, who knew? I had no idea. That's crazy. But you're right, it doesn't guarantee that Richard, it doesn't guarantee that he's going to make the team.
But he was with the Panthers since 2012, so he's a Ron guy.
Yeah, well, Rodgers, caught that Hail Mary from Aaron Rodgers in Detroit.
I mean, if you look at Richard Rodgers, I think it was 2015, but he had a big year, one of those years.
It was the year that he caught the Hail Mary. I forget what the numbers were, but I remember when they signed him, that was the year. He caught that Hail Mary in a Thursday night game to beat the Lions at Ford Field from Aaron Rodgers.
2015, yeah. He had 8 touchdowns on 58 catches that year.
Yeah, exactly. 58 it was, and 8 touchdowns.
Yeah, and the play you're talking about, he had one play for 59 yards. That's got to be the Hail Mary.
Yeah, probably was. Back to Sprinkle for a moment. I mean, you actually make a legitimate point. Rodgers would be the other one that's, played and gotten significant time. I would make this one other point about Sprinkle. First of all, I think Jay Gruden liked him. And people can think what they want about Jay Gruden as a head coach. Jay Gruden knows offensive football and actually has a decent eye for talent. I think Sprinkle's got talent. I think you're right. There are areas of his game he's got to improve. He's got to be more consistent as a pass catcher. But, really, in terms of versatility, there's a reason he got all those snaps on a team with Jordan Reed and Vernon Davis. It's because he could do both things on the field. Unfortunately, when he was on the field, it was the biggest tell they had there for, several games, that they were going to run the football.
Right.
But I think he's got a chance. I mean,
Only thing that's worth pointing out is that his cap number jumps this year.
Yeah, it does.
The last year of his rookie deal. So, I mean, he's going from $600,000-$700,000 on the cap to $2.3 million. And this team's so far under the cap, I don't think they have to worry about that. But that doesn't mean if their big build isn't for 2021 anyway, that they try to, if you think Caleb Wilson, who's costing you next to nothing and is under team control for a while, can give you something similar, that's when the cap number might start to matter.
Are you one of these people, I guess Ben wrote about this initially last week, that thinks Ryan Anderson's a potential trade in the making somewhere down the road because they won't want to pay him in 2021?
I don't think it makes sense. I think Ryan Anderson's agent wants a trade because the way to get paid in the NFL for a guy like that is to get sacks. And I don't know that he's going to get the reps on the outside as a pass rusher to get sacks. But if I'm the Redskins and what are you going to get for trying to trade Ryan Anderson? A seventh rounder? Maybe a sixth?
Maybe.
I'd rather have Ryan Anderson for 2020.
Me too.
Because he can be your fourth pass rusher. If somebody gets hurt, he has a lot of value. I think he can play a little bit of strong side linebacker in run situations and goal line situations. He's a big, strong dude. I think he's versatile. Ron Rivera's talked about versatility a ton. I could see Ryan Anderson's, and I don't, Ryan, the way Ryan Anderson is, I don't think he wants to trade. He's like, as far as a culture fit situation, I think Ron Rivera would love Ryan Anderson. It doesn't add up to me. And I get that the Bill. So I listened to Ben. I think he was on with B-Mitch yesterday, maybe. And I listened to Ben kind of explain it that, you know, they're building for 2021. They might not have enough money to pay this guy, trade him now and get an asset. But a seventh-round pick is, you know, that's a lottery ticket. I don't know that that's an asset. And I think Ryan Anderson in 2020 on a scale of 1 to 10 is a 5 out of 10 or something. You know, maybe he's a 6 out of 10. I think a 2021 seventh-round pick is a 1 out of 10 as far as a value. So it doesn't add up to me.
I mean, Ryan Anderson, to me, was the most improved player on the team last year from the year before. I mean,
he was great in the second half of the year, for sure.
I thought that the arrow was pointed upward. The interesting thing about a new coaching staff, and this happens wherever, you know, a new coaching staff goes in the NFL, is that those covering the team and those following the team will be surprised by several things that happen between now and opening day in terms of, you know, who's on the roster and who isn't. They've got, you know, they've got their own system. They've got a fresh slate, clean slate. It's a losing franchise, a losing team. So nobody's really safe. I mean, we can obviously identify certain players that are safe. But the whole Ryan Anderson thing to me doesn't make any sense because I think he's a really good player. But at the same time, I also don't really know, based on what they have and what their scheme will be, how he fits. I mean, maybe they look at the guy that they've mentioned 5 times already, Jack Del Rio has anyway, Kevin Pierre-Louis, you know, and maybe somebody else, and they say, no, that we brought that guy in, and we like, you know, John Bostic, and we like Cole Holcomb and Thomas Davis for all the reasons that we don't necessarily think Ryan Anderson fits. That could be their thinking. We're going to be surprised.
Anderson's just so much bigger. There's definitely surprises coming. I kind of think they're going to be more on the offensive side of the ball than on the defensive side of the ball. But, like, Kevin Pierre-Louis, I think it's Louis. I don't know. KPL is what I'm calling
KPL.
Is 6 foot 230. Ryan Anderson
is a big dude.
250.
Yeah, he's a big dude.
He's a barrel-chested guy. Like, he can help you in different ways. And you know what? He's also, whatever they're trying to do with Reuben Foster, Ryan Anderson helps you there. Ryan Anderson, I believe, was the captain on those Bama teams. He is a leader for these dudes. And I think, I don't know how John Allen reacts. You trade away Ryan Anderson. It doesn't add up to me. That doesn't mean it might not happen, but I don't see it.
Give me your biggest June 17th predicted surprise on offense.
Whatever it is, I don't know what it's going to be, but I think two things. I think I'm still not going to be surprised if they add a veteran wideout, and maybe it's somebody we've heard of, maybe it's somebody that's familiar with the system in Carolina, Kevin Hogan or somebody, or is it Chris Hogan? Kevin Hogan was the quarterback.
Right.
Chris Hogan.
Gonzaga and Stanford, yeah.
So I think wideout, and then I think running back. They have, yeah. There's enough guys at running back where they have some names, like, even though it shouldn't, and the stats will tell you that he's kind of a plotter, Peyton Barber is the one on the outside looking in to me. And if they release a dude like Peyton Barber, that's headlines. You know, like, people have heard of him. He's had 1,000-yard seasons in the NFL. So, and a lot of other things could happen at running back. So I think that is where, you know, kind of that big August story will be.
I agree. That's what I was going to say. I think the surprise, if there's a big surprise, it's going to come at the running back position. And the biggest surprise would be if, for whatever reason, they decided to move on from Darius Geis. I know it doesn't make sense, but this is a culture change, too. And I do have this sense that while Darius is a great young guy with extraordinary talent, I wonder whether or not, you know, this is exactly what Ron Rivera is looking at that position. Obviously, there's health, you know, to begin with, and maybe they won't want to roll the dice on cutting somebody and hoping Geis stays healthy. But there's going to be a big surprise somewhere. I'm not predicting that. Let me make sure I'm being clear for all of you that are listening. I'm not predicting that. I'm just saying there's going to be a big one somewhere, and I think it could come at running back, and I don't think it would be Adrian Peterson. Adrian Peterson is part of this culture change. Adrian Peterson, Thomas Davis, Ryan Kerrigan. These are the, you know, these are the guys that Rivera and this coaching staff want to be a part of this first year or so as they try to, you know, change what has been obviously a troublesome culture here. All right, couple of quick ones to end, and then I'll let you run. The over-under basically somewhere between 4.5 and 5.5. We'll put it at 5. You're June 17th. You're going over 5 wins or under 5 wins?
Push an option?
No.
You know what? It's June 17th. I'll go 6-10. Give me the over. I hope I'm getting good juice on that.
Will Haskins prove by the end of the season that he either is or isn't the guy for, you know, 2021 and moving forward?
Yes, he will, and I'll parlay it with is the guy.
That would be my guess too, but I do think maybe's an option. That with, you know, there's still a chance we won't know, but you know. Here's the thing. Like, I keep changing on this. I'm definitely wishy-washy on this whole concept of will we know for sure about Haskins at the end of next year? Because on one hand, you can say unique offseason, not a fair offseason. It's a new coaching staff, third offensive coordinator. They didn't put obvious weapons around him. You may not know at the end of the year. And then I think to myself, well, if he's really the guy that I think he is, that elevated that team over the final 6 quarters that he started last year, maybe we'll know even more. Maybe he will play beyond and elevate the team, and it'll be obvious that the team's competitive offensively because of him, even if everything around him isn't great.
Well, and here's the only thing I'll add to that. I think for Ron and the new group in charge to stick with Dwayne, he has to prove it. Otherwise, next year, 2021, there is real competition. And depending what happens, I think that real competition could be Cam Newton.
Ooh, well, that's interesting.
Would that shock you? I mean, if Cam's a free agent again, whatever happens this year, he proves he's healthy. It's another year of rest. Or it's just proven that that teams don't trust him to be healthy. Like, the fact that Cam's not on a roster is all about health. That's all that is, because he's still a very, very good football player.
And he's still – he's like 30, right? He's not 35.
Right.
He's like he's somewhere around 30 years old.
And here's the other thing for 2021. It's that's the off-ramp in Alex Smith's contract. So the organization would then release him and not take the cap hit. They're keeping him on the roster this year, on the team this year, because they would take a massive cap hit otherwise. You're better off just paying him and letting this thing continue to work. But 2021, if Dwayne's not your guy, it's time to really figure out if Alex can ever get on a field again. Like, I just don't think if Dwayne doesn't prove it this year, I think the organization then starts really turning the wheels. He doesn't get 2 years to prove it.
I think there's a chance he could get 2 years to prove it, because part of that could be everything that I described that I hope he sort of rises above. But if he doesn't, and there's genuinely a feeling of we saw enough, but not enough to convince us, but look at the circumstances, and we did win 6 games because we were good defensively, so we can't solve the problem at the top of the draft with Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence. I think that I don't think it's definite that he doesn't get 2021 to prove it. It makes sense that he wouldn't, but I think that, you know, it's context. Will the last two? Is the NFL going to start on time? Right now, your guess on June 17th.
Yes.
Will they complete the NFL season?
Yes. They're pushing the gas, and I think they'll get it done.
Yeah, I hope you're right. Thank you.
Now, a second spike and a fall outbreak. I don't know, man. I'm not a epidemiologist or whatever it is. But I know that those in the NFL want to get this thing on and finished.
All right,
the NFL's in a contract year too, man. Remember that.
Let's play some golf one of these days. I'll talk to you soon. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, Kev.
J.P. Finley. Everybody, always good to catch up with JP. Follow him on Twitter at JPFinleyNBCS. Of course, he does his DC Redskins Talk podcast, which you can get anywhere. JP does a great job covering the team. We actually have a lot of really good people right now covering the team for a lot of different outlets in town. JP is of course, one of the best. And we will definitely, when the season starts, hopefully on time, get JP on each week following the games once the season starts. Quick word about Roman. If you were to guess on average how many days people in the U.S. have to wait to see a doctor, what would you say? A week maybe? Actually, 29 days is the average in major U.S. cities to wait to see a doctor. If you're dealing with a condition like erectile dysfunction, you want treatment ASAP. That's why our friends at Roman have spent years building a digital platform that will connect you with a doctor that's licensed in your state, all from the comfort of your home. Roman makes it convenient to get the treatment you need on your schedule. Just grab your phone or computer, complete a free online visit, and you'll hear back from a U.S. licensed physician within 24 hours. Don't have to wait 29 days. 24 hours you're going to hear back from a U.S. licensed physician. If the doctor decides treatment's right for you, Roman's Pharmacy will ship your medication to you with free two-day shipping. That's free two-day shipping. You'll also get free unlimited follow-ups with your doctor anytime you've got questions or just want to adjust your treatment plan. With Roman, there are no commitments and you can cancel anytime. So if you're struggling with ED, go to GetRoman.com. And use my promo code Sheehan, S-H-E-E-H-A-N, Sheehan, for a free online visit, and you'll get two-day free shipping. That's GetRoman.com, promo code Sheehan, for a free online visit and free two-day shipping. All right, one last thing to get to before we finish up for the day. ESPN.com has been running this all-decade series by division. So they give you the best player over the last decade, 2010 to 2019 on each team, and an honorable mention of the best player on the team over that decade. And then they give you an all NFC East team and coach as well in this conversation. The first part of this is just the best player on each team over the last decade. Dallas, Teron Smith, it was the best player over the last decade. Jason Witten was the honorable mention. The Giants, it was Eli Manning with Odell Beckham Jr. as the runner-up, as the honorable mention. In Philly, it was Jason Peters at left tackle, followed by Fletcher Cox. I would have had that the other way around. And then for the Redskins, Ryan Kerrigan was picked as the best player of the last decade for the Redskins, and the honorable mention was Trent Williams. Now, John Keim was asked to pick these spots, and he actually, Keim texted me a while back. I mean, it may have been 2-3 weeks ago, and he asked me who I thought the best player for the Redskins was of the last decade, and I said Trent would be my number one. And then I mentioned, you know, Jordan Reed if he had stayed healthy, Kirk if he had, you know, signed a long-term deal. You know, I put Kerrigan in the conversation, and then I said Tress Way. Like, Tress Way would be a legitimate candidate on this team over the last decade to have been the best and most productive player. But Trent would be my pick. You know, it would probably be Trent 1 and Tress Way 2. You know, with Kerrigan, if I had a second honorable mention. You know, Jordan Reed's not in consideration because he couldn't stay healthy. Kirk isn't in consideration because he only started three seasons here. So, you know, three and a half or whatever it was. I would have Trent number one and Kerrigan number two. That's the way I would do it. I think Trent Williams was really the only A-plus player at times that the Redskins had during the entire decade. Tressway would be the other. And I think Jordan Reed played, you know, certainly in 2016 at an A level, if not an A plus level, but he couldn't stay healthy. Trent would have been my number one, and Kerrigan, Tressway would have been my number two, and then Kerrigan probably number three. Now, they did a poll of those four picks for the four division best players of the decade, Tyron Smith, Eli Manning, Jason Peters, and Ryan Kerrigan. And so far, Kerrigan's bringing up the rear significantly in the voting. Eli Manning leads the voting, Tyron Smith second, Jason Peters is third. You know, they combine essentially for 91% of the vote, and then Kerrigan has just 9% of the vote. So he came in last. Now, the NFC East coach of the decade, boy, this would be a tough call because to me, it would be either Tom Coughlin, but you'd have to consider Doug Peterson. You'd have to consider Doug Peterson. And what he did, he won a Super Bowl. He's been to the postseason. You know, at this point, is it three consecutive years that Doug Peterson's been to the postseason in Philadelphia? Is it three out of three? I think it is three out of three for Peterson. Or is it just two for two? I'm forgetting on his thing. It's three for four. He took over in 2016, went 7-9, then won the Super Bowl 13-3, and the last two seasons finished 9-7 both years, won the division last year, and advanced to the postseason. They won a game in 2018 in Chicago before losing a very close game to the Saints in the divisional round. And last year, they lost their quarterback early against the Seahawks at Lincoln Financial and lost that game 17-9. Peterson's probably the pick here for the decade because let's not forget that Tom Coughlin, you know, didn't win both Super Bowls in this last decade. Coughlin won that first Super Bowl, the 2007 season, and then only coached till 2015 and had a losing record his final three seasons. So for this particular decade, even though they won a Super Bowl, Doug Peterson's probably the right choice. Probably the right choice. It's one or the other. You know, it's got to be either. I mean, there's no Cowboy coach. No way you could give it to Jason Garrett. I mean, no matter what his record was, they won some divisions. They got to some playoffs, you know, games. But how many playoff games? Did they go to the playoffs twice during his tenure? Maybe three times. I forget. They lost that game at Lambeau after beating Detroit. That was the closest they got. They've won some divisions, the Cowboys have. And I remember when Jason Garrett, you know, got fired, his record is like, you know, well over 500, a much better record than the last several Redskins coaches in a row have had. Jason Garrett's got a winning record, but no, I'd go with Peterson and what he's done in a much shorter period of time. I think that's probably the right call there. ESPN.com had Peterson as the coach with Coughlin as the runner-up. The all-decade NFC East team offensively didn't include one Redskin. The quarterback was Eli Manning. The running backs were Zeke and LeSean McCoy. The receivers were Beckham Jr. and Dez Bryant. Trent Williams was not the starting tackle. It was Tyron Smith. Brandon Brooks, who just tore his Achilles in Philly and is out for the season, he is one of the two guards. Zach Martin, the other. Travis Frederick's the center. Jason Peters is the other tackle. So, there it is for all of you Trent Williams people who think that he was the best tackle in the game or top five tackle in the game. Well, he played in a division with two great ones during the same period of time in Tyron Smith and Jason Peters. And in this particular, vote, it was Peters and Tyron Smith who were voted the best tackles. The tight end was Jason Witten over that decade. Defensively, you know, there are a couple of absolute locks in my mind. Then it gets a bit murky. But Fletcher Cox would be the number one defensive player in the division over the decade. I don't know how that would be debated unless you're going to say that like a Jason Pierre-Paul, trying to think of the other pass rushers. Well, DeMarcus Ware, but he didn't play that many seasons in the decade. Here's the list. DeMarcus Lawrence, Fletcher Cox, Justin Tuck, who only played 3 years in the decade, or four seasons, excuse me, in the decade. Jason Pierre-Paul. Sean Lee was a hell of a linebacker in the division during the decade. DeMarcus Ware, man, the Cowboys loading it up on defense. Ryan Kerrigan picked as one of the NFC East's decade outside linebackers. D'Angelo Hall selected as one of the corners. Interesting. Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, and then Malcolm Jenkins and Landon Collins was the strong safety, really obviously for the years that he had in New York. I'd have to think about that one. But anyway, there you go. On defense, two Redskins show up. And then the punter, the all-decade NFC East punter, was Tressway. The kicker was Dan Bailey, and the kickoff punt returner was Darren Sproles, who was spectacular at times during the decade. So anyway, more disrespect for the Skins. Trent Williams not being on there. There's nobody else that you would put on there. You know, DeSean Jackson in his combo of Philly and Washington could have been considered for one of the wide receiver positions. I think that that's fair. Pierre Garçon could have been considered as one of the wide receivers. I'm just trying to think out loud in terms of Redskins players, but that would have been it. You know, that would have been it. You know, you're not picking Alfred Morris or Adrian Peterson or you know, certainly not Bob, Bob G the third, because he just had one good season. Anyway, that's it for the day. Stay safe. Back tomorrow with Tommy.